Hello and welcome to Roll for Topic, a roundtable discussion about topics related to running role-playing games. I'm Chris Salzman.
And I'm Andy Rowe.
Andy, I am in my mobile recording studio right now. I'm holed up in a back office at my downtown office. So hopefully the audio is okay here. I'm just going to put that up front just in case it is terrible. And then if it's great, then we can just cut this part.
But, yeah, when you say mobile recording studio, I picture sort of a trailer that you're in.
Just out of frame, you can't see this. I have a whole like RV set up with a team of people, my production production studio, and we have like one of those like fake on the side.
Exactly.
D20 Productions. So it has been like a month and a half since we've recorded a podcast or talked. So I was hoping that we could kind of touch base a little bit and maybe, talk about like what we've been doing for the past little bit and maybe some like initial plans that we have for gaming for 2025.
Yeah. It's a new year. It does feel like it's been a while. How did the, obviously listeners at this point have heard the holiday actual play. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk a little bit about the experience of running that?
Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah. So I just looked this up. So we've been doing this podcast for essentially 6 years now at this point.
Terrifying.
which is nuts. And I think every year we've done this like build a dungeon, play a dungeon thing since we started. Yeah. So that is pretty cool and pretty fun. Yeah. So this most recent one, which you can go listen to it if you want to. So we did the build a dungeon with John Corey and Kyle Latino again. And that was super fun. I think we maybe laughed more than we brainstormed. And then I ran it for some people. So I was talking with another friend, couple days ago, and I just mentioned like that my notes for that adventure, like as we were playing that game, I kind of just like kept crossing out like large sections of what we were gonna do, because like, it's that classic thing, right? Like you prepare way too much material for what you actually end up getting to. So I mean, I think there's a good 50% of that adventure that we ended up brainstorming that just never made it to the table. But it was really fun. So this was, I feel like, the adventure we came up with, and like the sort of general overview is like, you need to go help Santa save Christmas, right? Is the general idea of it, right? And so like you go up there, all the elves are out of sorts. You have to go like kind of help the elves get their Christmas spirit back and help Santa get his Christmas spirit back, by doing some very role playing gamey, things. So it was super fun to run. Like I just had an absolute blast. The players were phenomenal for this. They always are. Whenever we ask people to come on to play a game with us. And it's like the adventure itself ended up being like such like an easy one to run. And I feel like that's always the good hallmark of when you're putting an adventure together, you're just like, you're not worried about running it at all. And like that was very much my experience. It's like, oh yeah, I see exactly how this is going to go. Right. Like there's definitely, there's questions about what they'll react to, like, and how they're going to react to things. But for the most part, it's like, yes, every part of this is going to be fun. We're going to be able to, have a good time with this. So then running it was like almost a breeze from there. Cause it's just like, okay.
That's great too.
Yeah. This is going to be good. And I know the players will bring it too. So I definitely want to try this one. This one might end up in my holiday rotation as a game that I can draw on if people want to play something
on the holidays. That's great. I just see that one of the players made a comment in a Discord that, let me step back. When we were planning it, we were trying to figure out how to get things going as quickly as possible without a lot of player noodling around in the beginning.
Yeah.
And there was even a sequence we had that we cut out of the adventure because we thought it would put too much of a chance for players to dither around before the adventure actually began. So in that one, we had actually thought about having a scene in the mall before the adventure started. And that was cut because, it would introduce a lot of opportunities for the players to dither around without driving forward the plot at all. And it's kind of funny because even in our stripped down version, the players spent a lot of time dithering around in the intro scene that you dropped them into, which really they were, just for context, they're on the roof of Santa's cabin basically, and they had to figure out a way to get down into the cabin. There was really only one way. It was the chimney. On paper that's fairly obvious, like just go down the chimney, let's get the adventure started, but in practice they spent a fair amount of time scouting out the roof and, you know, moving around and think and other classic adventure things like that.
Yeah.
Did that give you, in the moment as a GM, did you have any thoughts about what was happening? Did that feel like it was dragging on forever and you really needed to get them moving again? Or were you enjoying the player experience of sort of bantering around exploring the environment?
Yeah, I was enjoying it. And I think it's the sort of thing where, again, right, we're just talking about, like, we've been doing this podcast for years. I think if I had done this the first year, like if this had been the adventure we ran the first year and that was happening, I think I would have been freaking out, like internally, like, you know, like, oh no, we really gotta get there. But I think like this time it was just like, you know, they're having fun. I just sort of need to sit back and let this happen a little bit. Like, you know, if you listen back to it, I'm sure you can sort of see me nudging them towards the eventual solution.
Yep.
A little bit. Cause it's like, well, I mean, you know, you are in the middle of a snowy expanse. There's exactly one thing you can go into. You know, like, yes. There's enemies all around you. Like, well, yeah, you can get there eventually. But I think the thing that I was thinking about with that is that it was also the first moment at which sort of I let go of narrative control of the story and let them start to inhabit their characters a little bit. So there's a combination of, you know, they had sort of a task in front of them, but this is also the first time they were getting to really play with their characters at this point. So like the combination of those two things without like sort of a clear, like someone sort of pushing them along, I think that led to maybe more dithering a little bit, right? Cause like everybody sort of wanted to show off a little bit. Like, this is who my character is. Like, you know, like I think even, Claire's character, like we were just sort of like trying to figure out like how does it even move? you know, she was playing like a snowman character, you know. So it's like there's some of those questions that we're answering in addition to the like you have the very simple puzzle of, you know, you gotta go down the chimney. You gotta go down the chimney and you gotta mean it. So like I think it was fine. Like I do wonder from like a content production perspective, it's like, you know, is that compelling audio? And I think it probably is fine. Right. Yeah. Like if we were some sort of mega actual play podcast, we might want to like look at that and be like, well, you know, is there a different way to approach this? Whatever. But I think for like the sort of the vibe that we're going for, I think that was totally fine.
Yeah. As a listener, I had similar thoughts actually. You know, one thought I had is like, wow, you know, they're spending a lot of time on the roof. Cause that was the kind of content producer in me having that thought. But from a play perspective, the characters and the players needed time to flesh out what the stuff on their character sheet meant. Because we were playing a pretty rules light game, there was not a lot of detail on the sheet. There's, you know, a few descriptive words about their characters and there are a lot of questions, and they seem to use that scene up on the roof pretty smartly, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As a way to stretch just explore the world of possibility within range of their character concept. And it's hard to know how you could have fast forwarded through that without a game system that was so much more detailed that all of those answers were ready for them already on their character sheet.
Yeah.
And that sounds like it would be less fun to me from a play experience.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of wonder. Cause right. Like, so we're dancing around this a little bit. Like there's like a couple elements at play, right? Like, so we're recording an actual play. So on one hand, you want it to be entertaining to listen to, but at the same time, like I want to play games with my friends, you know? So like we're also like playing a game with each other too. So there's the performance aspect of it, but then there's also the game playing aspect. And like, yeah. I think one approach to that would be, you know, if you really didn't want that to happen, is to offline sort of do that initial character work. But I mean, I think there's something really fun about watching people come up with those things and sort of figure them out as they go along. I am also not the sort of GM and player to want to come to the table with like the Bible of like, here's how everybody looks, here's everybody's backstory, that sort of stuff. Like I definitely like to find that out during play. So to me, it was great to have, you know, dedicate a couple minutes for each character to sort of figure that out. Like, yeah, like what's your look and like, yeah, how do you move? And, you know, what's your voice and how are you going to interact with each other? Those sorts of things I think are a lot more fun for me to see sort of played out at the table, like with some sort of inciting event, right? Like, so this is like the meet at the tavern sort of setup. Like this is the meet at the tavern, right? It just happens to be on top of the roof in the middle of the North Pole.
Yes.
Yeah. 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 So I'm curious, like, so you got to listen to it, after it was recorded. Like, yeah, so you edited the actual play itself. Yeah, did you find yourself, like, I don't know, like, listening to it and being like, oh, I really would have done something differently, you know, in this place or that place?
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I think the players, this adventure, I think it was particularly important that the players catch on to the vibe of mm-hmm. the adventure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the vibe of, you know, they quickly figured out that they had the ability and, in fact, the responsibility to sort of build out the world with their own imaginations. Mm-hmm. So a lot of their questions were less about, like, what are the rules and the boundaries of this game space? And more like, I'm going to contribute to the game space.
Yes.
With this. And we picked, we picked sort of a genre that I think lent itself to that by being really well known, the sort of Save Santa, Save Christmas, you know, a holiday special genre. And I think everybody's on board with that. And I was just pleased that everybody seemed to click pretty fast for everybody.
Yeah.
And it made for a better experience. So.
Yeah. Yeah. It is interesting you bring that up, right? Cause like, so it was intentionally, a lot of that was intentional, right? Like, so even the notes that I'd written down beforehand, like, right, there's sort of like, there is a rough map of Santa's workshop, right? With all the different rooms and how they connect with each other. It doesn't really matter though, right? Like, so like when we were playing, you know, I was mentioning like kind of just crossing off big swaths of the adventure and stuff. That was just merely like instead of these two exits, we just have sort of one exit, right? Like, and we're just going to kind of cut off this room entirely. Or if they decide that they really want to do this, you know, this next thing. I didn't listen back to it, yet, but like there was even at one point where I just sort of stopped and was like, hey, like, which one of these sounds more interesting to you? And then we just went with that one, sort of the next room in the dungeon. And I think like that style of play, I think works well for how I run games and like particularly the sorts of people that I like to play with, I think. But I did have the feeling like running this one in particular that like, I think next year we might want to do something that's a little crunchier, right? Like a little bit like more like set in stone. Like, you know, the first two, I think, adventures we did were very much like traditional D&D adventures, right? Like there was, you know, everything was mapped out pretty well. You know, like we had all the secrets and stuff sort of figured out. Whereas with this one that we ran, like one of those rooms, I won't tell you which one, like my notes for it were basically just like, here's the thing that they have to do. And then we built everything, you know, as we were going along with it. And then it being like sort of my favorite part about running that adventure was that room. But it was like, you know, if I had done that, the traditional, like, you know, write down in the module, like exactly like here's all the stuff that's in the room and like here's all the secrets, here's like what they can discover. That stuff wouldn't have happened. It wouldn't have been organic.
Yeah. It's not like a question of, I think, what is the right way to run an adventure, but you do get really different experiences from those two approaches, right? In this approach, we had very lightly established a couple of, you know, key facts about each location and not anything more specific than that. And that is its own type of unique playing experience, I think, where you're exploring the space by adding to it as the player, right? You're exploring it at the same time that you're helping to build it.
Yeah.
It's a different experience, not better or worse than one where there is the GM has a very detailed description of what is and isn't possible and what is and isn't present in this space. Mm-hmm. And in that case, your player experience is to try and figure out what those boundaries are, not by creating and adding to the boundaries yourself, but by poking around at the setting until you find the levers and the buttons that are present there already for you to manipulate. So
the most recent Splatbook episode, Ben and John were just sort of talking about, they're actually talking about RPG game design, but they were really talking about this idea of sort of a consistent experience. Like, this is the thing that stuck out to me from their conversation, where like, so a board game, like part of the appeal of a board game is that the experience of playing that board game is going to be relatively consistent across players and across different play sessions and things like that. Like you have a very constrained set of rules. Like the theme is super well defined, all that sort of stuff. So like you open up that box and it's like, it's going to be sort of fun or not fun to you. And if it's fun, then the next time you play is probably going to be fun. And like, right. Like it's just like, it's just this consistent thing, right? Whereas with tabletop games, like they're kind of like highs and lows too, right? Cause like there's so much space in there. Especially in story games, right? There's so much space in there for it to be this really like strong experience or this really negative experience, mm-hmm. right? Cause like some of that consistency is going to be based on what the players can bring to the table. That point. Yeah. And I think like the crunchier you get for me, that's generally getting into like almost the realm of like consistency at that point, right? Like to me, it's like, well, if you're going to have all these rules and it's not going to provide a consistent experience, then like, what are the rules for? Like at that point.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you know, so I think, yeah, again, like, so approaching the adventure design for these like build a dungeon, play a dungeon, it's like the crunchier it gets, like kind of the more, I don't know, in the weeds you get with like maybe yeah, like what the setup and stuff is. I think the more it becomes something that's like I'm going to say the word product, and I don't mean that in like a negative way that I think it can kind of take it. It becomes more of like a product where it's like, it'd be easier to sort of turn around and put it up on drive-through and be like, here's the thing. Whereas with this one, right, I feel like this is on the opposite, almost the opposite end of the spectrum. It's sort of like the thing that I put up on drive-through would be like, here's some rough ideas and
really, a note card's worth of stuff.
Right? Yeah. Like it's like a one page RPG almost. And it's like, I really hope that your players like, pretending they're playing Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, yes. You know, the game, the movie, the game. Yeah, it's which like, again, like nothing good or bad about this. It's just like, yeah, kind of an observation. I think I was sort of making, listening to the Splat book and then also thinking about like, yeah, running this year's adventure. But
yeah.
All right. Well, we don't have to belabor that. I mean, definitely go listen to those if you want. I mean, I think the thing I always hope that we get out of this exercise is to be able to show people sort of the range of like what it takes to run a game. Yeah. Right. So like from the, like, you don't have any idea to you have an idea, you flesh it out, then you actually run it. Right. And hopefully demystify that a little bit while also having some fun with it. And my other hope is that people that do run games, you're just sort of yelling at your podcast player. Like, why did you make that decision? Right. Like,
Yeah. My hope is always that we model the experience of creating a game and then running it. Mm-hmm. And even though it is being broadcast on a podcast, you know, we are not scripting this. We're not editing it for cinematic effect or anything like that. We're trying to present what it looks like to GM and run a game in as realistic, I guess, a manner as possible.
Yeah.
And I hope that is helpful to listeners.
Yeah. I think it's helpful. I know it's fun. I mean, I get feedback every year from at least a few people that say that they really enjoy it. Yeah. And if we were trying to go cinematic, we would, not let one of us run it. We'd hire someone else to do it.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So, hey, Chris, I had a couple of quick questions for you just because it is a new year. I guess the holidays are past us at this point, but it's a new year, 2025, 2024 was a little rough towards the end, but we are fresh starts. And I just wanted to ask, as we have asked in past years, what do you got on your radar for 2025 GMing wise?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I am continuing to play in The Enemy Within, this campaign that Matt Wilson is running. So super excited for that and to see where that goes. As far as running games are concerned, I just had a conversation with one of my friends and neighbors about, like, you know, he's like, you know, we really just need to get together and try to figure out how to play some games together. And he's very much a story gamer. He's into improv and stuff like that. So I'm really hopeful that we can start to get together. What we sort of talked about doing is trying to do some more like one shots, like one page RPGs and rotating out who's running what. So I'm pretty excited for that, right? Like, and I'm hoping that can be something that's at least every month or so. Cause like we both have younger kids. So the thought of adding like a big long campaign, it's just not going to happen. So we have to pick some stuff. It's a little bit easier to do. That's sort of like my main gaming goals this year. I think I just want to get into a little bit more of a consistent, like regular, maybe like more local gaming group. Yeah. What about you?
Yeah, something similar, I guess. I've put a lot of thought into it, and yeah, last year I feel like the sort of, from my GMing perspective, the defining experience last year was starting up a Band of Blades campaign that mm-hmm. I had anticipated and hoped would run for the whole year.
Yeah.
But it actually petered out after like two sessions.
Okay.
And yeah. it was on me, not on the players. I got busy. I got, you know, overwhelmed with stuff, and mm-hmm. the campaign sort of slipped away from me. It was an online campaign, which I think adds a little bit of, you know, distance from your real, it makes it easier to push off or to let it sort of start slipping away. But so that's what happened. That happened early in the year. And I'd like to run a game this year, but I'm struggling just with the memory of that campaign, of not being able to keep that campaign together for the long term.
Yeah,
it kind of stings. I know that the you know, I don't think there's any hard feelings or anything like that on the part of the players, mm-hmm. but but like I said, it stings as a GM, and it is making me want to not pitch anything that I don't know I'll be able to keep up with and bring about.
Yeah.
And I guess I feel like I'm getting inside my head maybe a little bit on this mm-hmm. one too much because I have all these ideas. I mean, certainly all of us have all these campaign ideas that we want to run, I guess. You know, wouldn't mm-hmm. it be great if we ran this epic campaign? Or I've got this amazing idea for a cool campaign. You know, all of those, you know, require successfully meeting for 12 straight months and yes, playing on yeah. a regular basis. And it would be awesome if that happened. But I have this other voice inside me that's like, what if you dropped this need to run the perfect 12-month campaign and you just got people to show up to play regular old D&D mm-hmm. once a month
yeah.
and saw what came out of that? So I am struggling between those two things, between and a lot of it is nervousness based out of sort of past GMing failure, I guess. So
yeah,
I don't know. Do you have any thoughts about that? Or maybe, God forbid, even some advice for me?
Yeah, well, try to keep the advice to a minimum. I guess I'm curious, like, so with the Band of Blades game, like, I know you were pretty excited about that. And
yes.
Yeah, I'm sorry that it fizzled like that. Was there anything that you could really pinpoint that was like, oh, this was the big problem with it? Like, or was it just said scheduling got hard?
No, like, well, that's the challenge, right? I don't even know why it fizzled, except that at a certain point, I stopped trying to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I'm not going to bore you by going into what was going on in my life and what going on in my head at that time. But that was the frustrating part of it, was that it wasn't just like, oh, we all got busy, or oh, a key player had to leave because he moved out of state or something. None of those factors were present, yet the game kind of fizzled and I failed to keep it going.
Yeah.
And I couldn't tell you why exactly. And mm-hmm. not knowing why that happened makes it kind of hard to plan for a new campaign in which that mm-hmm. doesn't happen, because I don't really know what went wrong. Except, yeah. This is my personality. I mean, I feel responsible for it having not worked.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that responsibility is fairly laid on me. But I don't really know why it didn't work, and I don't want it to happen again.
Yeah, no, I think that is extremely reasonable to not want that to happen again.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if this is helpful or not, but like sometimes I think about there's this concept I ran across a few years ago about like the different sort of parts of a hobby. And like, you know, so you can have a hobby of music, and like your hobby of music could be playing music. It could be collecting instruments. It could be listening to music, right? Like there's like all these different facets that go into like particular hobbies. Like same thing with like minis, right? Like miniatures and stuff. Like maybe you really love painting minis. Like maybe you really love collecting minis. Like, right. There's like all these different ways that you can experience a hobby. And part of what I wonder if there's something about the GM brain that like just absolutely loves the part of the hobby that is planning a campaign, but then does not love the part of the hobby that is scheduling a campaign, scheduling a campaign, right? And like those, I think are two very different skill sets. They're two very different, like interesting problems to sort of like noodle on, and different, like, you know, hard to like different things that are hard to execute on. as well. Like, right. So it's like, I almost wonder if, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, because like, I'll just say like, this has happened to me definitely before, where like, I get excited about running a campaign. I will plan it out and like, want to get players excited and like, get players involved in it and stuff. And then it's just like, but the fun of that campaign was the planning it part.
Yeah.
And like, that's totally fine. That was just like the fun part about it. Obviously, I think like you and I like to sort of like the actual play is pretty important to us. And like, that's what we want to be doing when it comes down to it. But yeah, I do wonder if this was just a casualty of like, you know, the excitement was more about the planning of it versus the actual playing of it. Cause like, as you mentioned, right, it wasn't ideal circumstances, right? Like you're playing online, right? Like, and that's just always hard.
No, I think that's really good insight. Mm-hmm. And thank you for that.
Yeah.
I also wonder if I feel this sense that over the last few years, I have been drawn to this lure of the great, I guess, kind of white whale campaign, right? And I go online and I read about people's experience. Oh yeah, we ran Enemy Within and it took 2 years and it was the best experience of my entire life.
Yes,
and, or we ran Eternal Lies, or we did Curse of Strahd, you know. And I guess what I'm, you know, so Curse of Strahd is a good example because it's one I've thought very long and seriously about running, and I've done a lot of online research, and there's all sorts of people, you know, oh yeah, we ran that and here's what we learned. And it sounds so great, but it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work to make that happen.
Yeah.
And sometimes I wonder, you know, maybe I'm just not at a place in my life where I can orchestrate a year-long activity like that, that comes off really well and consistently. And
yeah.
Like for the last couple of years, the bulk of my, so I've been running a family game, but the bulk of my role-playing has been like, somewhere between one shots and mini campaigns, like so games that take like 3 game nights to resolve.
Yeah, yeah.
So Star Trek and Alien, and there have been a couple of others. And those, I think I want more than what that experience offers. That experience lets you kind of play in a space for a little while, but then there's big parts of all of these games that you don't get to experience when you're only visiting this world for one adventure over a couple of game nights, right? You don't get to see player progression mechanically or kind of narratively over time. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stuff that you don't get to experience. So I'd like to move away from that. I think I'm discovering that at this point, I'm not going to run the Enemy Within, well-orchestrated, impactful year-long experience of playing. So what is left then, right? And maybe what's left is just that experience of like, hey guys, do you want to come over and play D&D once a month?
Yeah.
And we don't worry about like where this campaign is taking us in advance. But that's also, I don't know, that has its own challenges, I think. And yeah, so
yeah, I mean, I wonder if, you know, I wonder if for you, if some of that, if you could sort of spare yourself some of that mental energy up front of like, you know, planning out this big campaign, like, you know, doing all the research for Curse of Strahd, reading everybody's actual play reports, getting all the resources and stuff together. Like if you just sort of set that aside and like just said, we're going to play Curse of Strahd, right? Like, so skip that initial portion of research and stuff and just said, like, we're going to play D&D. I'm going to run Curse of Strahd. And we're meeting next week. And then like, then you put a little bit of pressure on yourself of like, oh, we're going to be meeting next week. Like I need to get the initial stuff, like, you know, the initial stuff research. So rather than like front loading all the research, you're shifting yourself into almost a position of like, I can't front load it because I don't have time. So now I need to figure it out like as we're going along. Cause I think that's going to get more to the heart of sort of what you probably actually want out of the campaign, which is like you're playing games with your friends and you're reacting to what they're doing. And you're kind of like, you're setting things up. Maybe you're setting things up like 2 or 3 sessions in advance, but like not, you know, 15 sessions in advance.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Because like, again, things are going to happen and things are going to change. But yeah, I mean, I think like listening to you talk and then like knowing your history with gaming, I think that's probably what you need right now is just like, hey, we're going to meet once a month for D&D and I promise you it'll be fun, but I can't tell you what it is.
Yes.
You know, right. And then you just sort of take it from there. It's like you start with a one shot and have them establish their characters. And then if it's going really well and you're like, I want to run Curse of Strahd, there is always a magic portal they can step through to Bavoria, right? Like there's, yeah, that can always be sort of a, you know, a threat that you can introduce and go pretty fast to get there. Or just tell them like, hey, like, do you like these characters enough? Great. We're going to go jump into, into Curse of Strahd.
Yeah. That is really good food for thought.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that springs to mind is that as a GM, it makes a lot of sense that to the role of GM is typically added the role of coordinating the logistics of mm-hmm. making the game happen.
Yeah.
But it's funny, like as a person, and here I'm being a little bit vulnerable in this podcast here, mm-hmm. In the hopes that other people have had this experience and can relate to it. I feel like sometimes I need a producer, right?
Yeah,
not in the sense of producing like an actual play show, but like I need someone to figure out the venue and figure out the schedule and mm-hmm. remind me about the schedule and remind me about the dates
mm-hmm.
and that sort of thing. Because I'm very bad at that in real life. And any mm-hmm. of the managers, you know, that have worked with me in my many jobs will tell you, yes, Andy has his strengths, but they don't lie in the realm of, you know, of keeping track of dates and mm-hmm. that sort of thing. And I don't know, you know, I don't see a way for, you know, some GMs may have the experience of players that are both really gung-ho about the game that they're playing and mm-hmm. who enjoy and excel at that sort of logistical mm-hmm. planning.
Yeah.
That's not me. And I don't think the players I'm in my kind of local circle of gamers, I don't see people with that particular combination of traits or whatever. So yeah. That means that then it's got to be the GM's job to do this, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes like right now that feels like a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a lot, right? Cause it's like, I don't know, like you have kids, right? So like even the baseline of like, can I keep the house clean enough to have people over? It's like,
yes, yes, absolutely.
Right? Yeah. It's like, it's just, I mean, you mentioned the venue or you're like, you know, like, or, you know, can I convince my family that like, hey, we're playing games and I know like we're having fun and we're just hanging out, but at the same time, like, interrupting a lot is going to be a problem too, right? So it's just like this tricky balance of like, you know, it's, yeah, if you almost like you want like this, you want to be able to like go rent a room somewhere else. And it's like, everybody meet, you know, meet here, which is part of what we do, right? With the con, right? And that's, you know, a big part of it. It's just like, you know, you get away from everything else. Excuse me. Yeah. So it's like, you have this like the venue problem. And then there's like the scheduling problem and like there's tips and tricks and stuff to combat that, but it's all like eventually it's going to come down to like everybody needs to be aware of their schedule and be able to like schedule something, and it's just that's a big ask too, right? Because if everybody else has kids and stuff. Yeah, so like I'm right there with you. It's like it is just this like daunting series of problems, you know, and like then you have all of these before you even get to the hey, like what game are we playing? Right, you know, like what game are we playing? Yeah, and like that's hard, but I mean I think it's hard, but it's also sort of worth it to push through that. But I don't know. Everybody sort of has to figure out how to push through that in their own way, I think is what I've observed, right? Cause everybody has their own different circumstances.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, it's just, there is no good answer, unfortunately. Like, cause you're also asking for a level of maturity from your players to like being able to show up when they say they can show up and sort of treat it like a little bit more importantly than they might other parts of their schedule.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause like you are right. And like, that's sort of the respect and the request that you're making of them.
Certainly. And yeah, to be clear, I do think I have the people I tend to play with outside of my family, you know, are, mm-hmm. they are respectful. They are, you know, consistent. They show up you know? Yeah. So I certainly can't complain about flaky players.
Yeah.
But I'm just struck, I guess, as I hit, well, I guess I'm well past the point where I hit middle age, at the difference, you know, when I'm flipping through the D&D, the new D&D player's handbook, and I'm in the new D&D GM's guide, and I'm reading its advice for running games and stuff. And it's a, it is a very different experience, you know, when you are kids and you are hanging out all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is more like, all right, what are we going to play next? Mm-hmm. And there's no question that you can all make it happen versus, you know, adults, you just have a different set of challenges. And mm-hmm. some of the challenges live inside your brain and in your neuroses and your,
yes.
and your mental illness or whatever it is that you yeah. have to work out. And so as I read, you know, for instance, the new D&D GM's guide, which I think is well regarded as having taken some steps to sort of rethink what goes into a good GM's guide.
Mm-hmm.
That may be true, but it also isn't really talking to me. It's no. not really, you know, I need to, you know, how do you be a good GM when you have ADHD and yeah. you can't focus on things? So, you know, those are like the adult
yeah.
Challenges that get in my way as a mm-hmm. GM.
Yeah.
And I don't expect the Wizards of the Coast to write me my personalized DMG for like, Andy, how to get over your problems in keeping a game running. But at the same time, I do feel like there is a, an opening, let's say, for somebody to step into the space of like, you're a GM, you're a busy adult, you've got all these, weird, quirky restrictions mm-hmm. in your life and in your brain and in your family and stuff like that. What does it look like for you to participate in this hobby and to get what you want out of this hobby?
Yeah.
I mean, there's no chapter in the DMG that has that title because that would be impossible to write. But yeah. I'd love to see someone take a crack at that beyond the what often feels to me quite reasonably beyond the current focus, which tends to be like, hey, you're a new GM and you're like age 17.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, here's some things to think about when running your game with your buds.
Yes. Yeah. yeah. You have the infinite time, infinite time, no yeah. money, you know, you're just on a run.
Okay. Right, so yeah, I've yeah. kind of beaten that horse for a while. Yeah. It listeners, I hope, so I feel a little sheepish airing some of this stuff, but I hope that at least some of you guys can relate to that experience. And I want to kind of wrap it up by saying part of the problem is that there's so much stuff I'm excited about the idea of playing that it's hard, that's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard
yeah.
too. Right. So it's not, I don't want to sound too negative. I love this hobby, and the problem is I've got too much stuff and I don't know how to make it happen in a way that works for me and my players. So
yeah, it's hard. I mean, it's a good place to be. It's not, you are not like being like, I can't do this hobby anymore. It's like, how do I do this hobby? You
know, yeah, that's, exactly.
Those
yeah.
are two very different problems to have. And I think that is a good problem, even though it can be stressful, and it is stressful. So
yes.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll figure it out. I mean, I think you should just plan a D&D night.
I think so too.
Yeah,
that's where my heart is kind of pulling me towards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
play D&D, and maybe it turns into Curse of Strahd, or maybe we just D&D'd up for a year.
You know? String together some stuff, and yeah, you end up with like, oh hey, that was the experience that I wanted. So,
yeah, and yeah, you yeah. end up with something that's just as fun as Curse of Strahd would have been, and you made yeah. it yourself. So
yeah. Cool. All right. That's good. Well, let's wrap it up there. Yep. Yeah, this was a good conversation. I think this will be helpful for other people. I'm curious if we listen back to this in a year, just sort of, yeah, what you will have experienced.
Will I want to slap myself listening to this episode again? Yes.
You're like, you idiot. You should have just done these 10 things.
Yeah. Get a grip, Andy.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, I think that does it for us. We've been Roll for Topic. We're part of the Roll for It Media podcasting network. Our sister show, The Splat Book with John Corey. I was going to say Kyle Latino, but not Kyle Latino these days.
I know. Still getting used to that.
I know. Yeah. With Jess and Ben continues. It's really great. I mentioned the yeah, the last episode that they recorded where they kind of talked about some RPG design, that was really good. I think Ben has an interesting take on it. He plays a ton of board games and also a ton of role-playing games. So I think he brings kind of an interesting perspective about like what's good from board games, what's good from role-playing games. So that was a good conversation. They also played, they did an actual play of, is it To Serve Her Wintry Hunger? Something like that. I'm going to get that totally wrong. But yeah, it was super good. A super fun game. It's written by the same person that did 10 Candles as well. Yeah, so go listen to that actual play. That's really great as well. Cool. All right, well, that does it for us. I've been Chris Salzman.
I've been Andy Rao.
Remember, if your players have been fun, you're a great GM.